Welcome to the Money Motivation and More podcast. My name is Robert Geniak, author of the international bestseller Rich is a State of Mind and host of the new show We Talk Money that airs on we-tv.ca. And this episode is entitled, What Do We Want? Money. Now, if that sounds a little bit sloganish, it's usually followed by, when do we want it? Now. We're nearing the end of Financial Literacy Month in Canada, and much has been written, spoken, and expounded upon about the merits of financial literacy. And I don't want to get into that in this podcast, because my belief is that while financial literacy is a great thing, and it's certainly better than being financially illiterate, what I've learned along my path and what I've learned in work that I've done with financial professionals and their clients is that while financial literacy is great, behavior matters more. And when it comes to behavior, one of the behaviors that we're trying to accomplish with our finances, what do we want? Money. We all want money, and quite frankly, we all want more of it than we have. And is that a bad thing? No, it's not a bad thing. Money is not a bad thing at all. And I know there are some people who will come up and say, well, you know, money is the root of all evil. Now, I've never been much of a biblical scholar myself, but the actual phrase is the love of money is the root of all evil, not that money is in fact evil. So, with that out of the way, the question then becomes, how do we accomplish that? How do we get more money? Now, I'm going to start by taking a look at it from a behavioral issue. I was recently on the Young Money podcast with Tracy Bissett and had an outstanding conversation with her. And I'm going to share a little bit of that conversation right now.
Anything else you think has been kind of a theme for you or something that kind of shows up repeatedly that you would attribute to your success?
Well, one thing that fortunately, and I learned it probably later than I should, but I've been able to apply it quite successfully over the last 10 to 15 years, is the entire concept of delayed gratification. That I guess when I was younger, like many people, wanted everything now. It's like, what do you mean I got to wait? But I want it now. And if you've ever been a parent, you understand that discussion with a three-year-old. It's like, now. And I'll admit, I did some impulsive things, didn't save some money when I should have saved some money, understand the magic of compound interest and rule of 72 and all of those basic good financial things. And then, like many people, went, man, I wish I'd known this when I was 25. And the reality, Tracy, is we all knew it when we were 25. We just didn't do anything with it when we were 25. Mm-hmm. And so part of my encouragement when I get to speak to clients of the financial industry, when advisors bring me in to speak to both their clients and their clients' children who are in that kind of magical 20 to 35 group, that's the one thing I try to impress upon them is the power of delayed gratification to be able to create a life for yourself that when you do things today that your friends and your social circle don't want to do, later on in life, you'll be able to do the things that they wish they could do and won't be able to do.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it. You're looking after your future self.
So as you can see from the discussion I had with Tracy, some of the basic fundamental building blocks to having more money are simple basic things, such as delayed gratification, understanding compound interest, the rule of 72, and staying out of debt whenever you can. But that's only part of the story. As the discussion with Tracy continued, we moved on to some other topics. And of course, one of the big ones, and this is covered in pretty much every single book on personal finance that's ever been released, and it's the concept of paying yourself first. Now, while paying yourself first is very, very important, what happens if you don't do it soon enough? What happens if you wait too long? What happens if the things that we should have known and done in our 20s and really didn't start in our 30s and maybe didn't even start in our 40s, what happens if we wait longer than that? Here's another snippet from Tracy Bissett's Young Money podcast where we discuss that very thing.
And the second was that even though we all knew we're supposed to pay ourselves first, I probably didn't do it as much as I probably should have when I was younger. And the more you do it before life starts throwing obligations at you, things like mortgage payments and car insurance and house insurance, gasoline and heat, hydro, and all of those fun things that life tosses along, the sooner you can do it, the easier it is later. And I had somebody ask me at an event, they said, I'm 55 years old and I haven't saved any money at all, but I'd like to save I'd like to have $1 million when I retire at 65. Is it possible? And I went, sure. And they kind of looked at me and said, really? I said, sure. I said, but you'd need to save about $2,800 a month for the next 10 years faithfully and make about 7.5% or 8%. And you should get pretty close to $1 million. I said, but here's my question. If you haven't been able to save $20 a month by age 55, how do you make the quantum leap from 20 to 2,800 in order to do that? And oh, by the way, if assuming you were just paying yourself at about a 10% pay yourself first sort of number, I hope you're making about $175,000 a year. I never did get the answer to that question. They kind of walked away with a bit of a scowl, probably thinking I was a bit of a smart, I won't say the other word. And I wasn't trying to be. You know, but mathematically, yes, we could have got them there. You could do the math to show somebody, Tracy, and I'm sure I know you've done it, to show people that, yes, you can do that. But the question is, what is the likelihood that you could make that quantum leap versus, oh, by the way, if you were 23 years old and you put away $100 a month from age 23 to age 65, you pretty much don't have to worry about whether or not you're going to have to pound away $2,800 a month. Because you're already going to be there. That concept of starting earlier, avoiding some of the, I got to do that. I got to be there. I got to go here. I got to buy this. I, you know, my friends are all doing this. I should all be doing this. My friend's buying that. I should be buying that.
And while I realize it sounds trite to say, if you want to have stuff you've never had, do stuff you've never done. When it comes to personal finances, it's not the one or two big things that we're ever going to do. It's the consistent application of little things that we do over and over and over and over again. Personal finance is boring. There's nothing exciting about it. If what you're doing with your money and your personal finances is exciting and keeping you up at night, there's a pretty good chance you're doing something you really shouldn't be doing to help move your finances forward. Understand the concept of the fear of missing out, that it's okay if you don't get to do the things that everybody else around you is doing. Because if you take the time today to do the things that the others won't do, later on, you'll be able to do a lot of things they won't be able to. That is one of the best reasons to take control of your personal finances. You can have, what? More money. This has been another episode of the Money, Motivation, and More podcast. I'm your host, Robert Geniak. And if you're getting this podcast from Apple Podcasts, thank you. It's also available on Blueberry, CastBox, Player FM, and at the robertgeniak.com website. If you're listening to it on some other platform, please drop me a note and let me know. I'd be happy to know where you're getting the podcast from. As always, I'm open to suggestions about future podcasts and about feedback about this very podcast itself. Until next time, thank you for listening.